Hello, everyone. You're very welcome back to Your Politics Podcast. We're all down here in Leinster House. It is Thursday, the 5th of September, around 4 o'clock. And usually it would be very, very quiet. But this week it is different. We had on Monday a massive housing policy announced by Sinn Féin. On Tuesday, a big government decision on relation to a commission of inquiry into historic abuse at schools. And we've had the Taoiseach in Ukraine. And somehow we also had a big story about a bike shed as well. So we'll have to get to the bottom of this. Micheál Lehane is here. So too is Julia Gash and also Sandra Hurley. Our new political coverage editor, Joe McGreedy, he's also here. And it's a bit like The Graduate and Dustin Hoffman. He's been banging on the door. We can see him through the glass. He's trying to get in, but Julia's managed to kick the lock and we've held him at bay so far. But the story, I guess, everyone's talking about, Sandra Hurley, is a bike shed here at Leinster House. How on earth is that the lead story now?
How on earth is it? Did it cost €336,000? That's the big question. We walked past it on the way in here. It's a sort of glass canopy with supported by steel. It is nicely done. It's sort of unobtrusive. The idea was that it wouldn't impede on sort of Leinster House building or the National Gallery, but it's incredibly expensive. It's not even a full shelter. Your bike isn't covered. If your bike was under there, it would be hit by wind and rain. And big questions about the cost. And if you look at what the OPW published this week, I think they said 322,000 covered construction and installation. And people really want to drill into how they got to those figures, what exactly amounted to that. There have been questions to the then minister in charge of the OPW, Patrick O'Donovan. He's now senior minister, of course. He said he knew nothing about it. It wasn't for the minister to approve spending. He did make some point about, you know, if people's bikes get wet, they could just put a plastic bag over the seat. You remember that?
So that's rather unbecoming for the National Parliament, isn't it, surely?
Yes, surely, exactly. But huge questions. It only holds maybe 18 bikes, some people 36. Saying 36.
Hang on, 36.
You can double it up, yeah.
So these are Sheffield stands, if you knew the official term. They're the kind of lowercase N-shaped tube that you lock your bike to. And everyone counted 18 and go, as I would have done. But my husband immediately was like, that's 36 bikes. And I was like, oh, okay. Yes, you can put one on either side. And if you're inventive and don't lock them to other people's bikes, please, you can put in maybe 40 bikes. But still, it costs more than my house to build. So that's a bit bonkers. I definitely stay dry when it rains in my house.
So currently the average house of a house in Waterford is 335,000.
Yeah. So, well, that's the question. If, as we just heard, how it looks and the materials involved and the price of it, the question is, Micheál, we understand why everyone's talking about it, but what's actually going to happen? We're hearing some calls for it. There must be a name and accountability.
That's what people want, and that's what the government wants.
What's defining accountability for me, please?
Well, Jack Chambers, the finance minister, said it's finding who's accountable and getting them to explain why it costs so much and then creating a general awareness in the public service that they need to go with the lowest price to try and deliver for the taxpayer. I think all these things probably should, that awareness should be there at the moment anyway. But I mean, the interesting thing about this as an exhibit piece, has there ever been anything in the nearby National Gallery that has garnered such public attention? Because all day yesterday, people were at the back gate of Leinster House and then up the side towards the National Gallery, taking pictures with their cameras. Dozens and dozens of people. So as an exhibit piece, it probably
it's an
works.
External exhibit piece as opposed to the Caravaggio inside. Indeed. Or at least I think that's been borrowed and lent out to Belfast.
I just think it's interesting like that this government does seem to be on course for a general election despite what the Taoiseach says. But it does kind of serve as a reminder too that it could take very little to put things off course, that a major controversy could emerge. Now, government are trying at least to keep a clear distance between themselves and this. It's a spending matter that doesn't have anything to do with the ministers. But if that doesn't really stack up in the public mind, at least, and I think there's a niggle to this and there's an edge to this that's going to sit there now. It's not at the point of crisis or anything like that, but it's there and it's something that people will always remember.
Well, that's a lovely segue if we're talking about the government and a possible election, because on Monday, Sandra Hurley, we had an opposition party for the first time producing a detailed policy programme in relation to housing. We're talking about Sinn Féin, but what was interesting as well about it, they just happened to be doing it in September, which just is possibly close to a general election.
Yes, it's a really important topic for Sinn Féin. No surprise they want to move the spotlight back onto housing. It's an area they're comfortable on. It's one that they feel they can gain a lot of votes on. And I think straight away it negates that accusation that the government has flung at them repeatedly. You don't have a plan on housing. Where's your plan? Now they're going to say, we have got quite a detailed plan. I wasn't at the briefing on Monday, I was off, but apparently it lasted 2 hours. There was a lengthy PowerPoint presentation and a huge amount of detail. So I think the battle lines on this have been drawn. There's a question around credibility. Who do you believe can build these houses? There's a lot of detail in it. Questions remaining, I think, about the Sinn Féin idea around affordable housing, how they're going to do that. This idea that the state would retain ownership of the land, the individual would be able to buy a house for 250 to 300,000 euro. Questions around whether the banks will secure mortgages against that, whether they would be willing to finance developers to build houses on that basis. The banks so far have kind of stayed out of this. I thought there was an interesting comment today from Glenveagh Homes, one of the country's biggest house builders. He's the chief executive was quoted in the Business Post as saying there's a lot of good things in this plan, but he didn't really buy into this idea. He said that land is not the primary cost when it comes to building affordable housing. There are other costs that make it very expensive, increased regulation, costs of materials that have gone up in recent times. And he doesn't think that this idea of taking the land out of the pricing model, that that's really going to help.
I thought it was interesting, Julia Gash, that the Kerry TD Pat Daly, Sinn Féin, I saw him and he was teetering around the Doyle car park outside there, and he'd got three big boxes of documents. And this is the slimmed down version. Instead of taking this Sinn Féin policy of more than 100 pages, he just had the short version and he was heading out that night. He was taking them down to Kerry and he's going to be knocking on doors immediately. You can see this connection, which is between a policy, a white hot issue, whenever the election is held, and people are knocking on doors.
That's it. And as Sinn Féin has said, they've made no secret of the fact that they want to land this slimmed down document in the home of every voter, you know. And so people can see that what is the number one issue for voters, a recent poll, I think Sunday's poll in The Independent, put housing still as the number one issue for voters, that Sinn Féin will put this document, slimmed down, as you said, into their letterboxes. And if people read it, take time to engage with it, maybe that will change the fortunes of Sinn Féin, who did not do so well in that poll.
And Micheál, I mean, Sandra put her finger on it. One of the things that was really interesting to see was, number one, the speed with which the government parties came out to try and trash Sinn Féin's stance, indicating once again how important housing is and the possibility that we're close to general election, but also zoning on that issue, the land, ownership of the land.
That's that key thing, isn't it? It goes back to the field and who owns the land, and that runs very deep in the Irish psyche, and if there's any kind of question marks around that, and it is, I suppose, overall, the affordable bit is a relatively small bit of that housing plan and the 300,000 homes that it's talking about, but that's there, and that is going to be the point of attack. The other big, huge kind of difference between government and Sinn Féin comes around those supports for first-time buyers, whether it's the First Home Scheme or the Help to Buy Scheme, and Sinn Féin saying it'll end the First Home Scheme, honour what has been committed to so far, and then it'll phase out the Help to Buy Scheme. I mean, given the fact that government are talking in the budget alone about putting another 100 million into that first home scheme, they're very different policies.
You do see that in what's being proposed. When it comes to the election, whenever that happens, the voting public is going to be given very widely different policies. What way do you want to go? And there is a clear blue water between the direction Sinn Féin wants to take it, even in the context of the state being more interventionist, having its own construction company in the capital, using state land to build, and the government still more reliant on the private sector.
Yeah, I mean, on the face of it, government haven't delivered, have they, when it comes to housing? There's more construction.
Sorry, I hear Dara O'Brien shouting.
Yeah, but I'm saying, from the garden. But if you look at the homelessness numbers, they're at a record high. So if you take that as the measure, if you take the fact that there is, as picked up in the local elections, this huge cohort of young people going to Australia again, which is along the lines of what happened during the economic crash, there's a failure there. At the same time, they can point to that huge upturn in the number of houses that are being built, that it could be up to 40,000 this year. And as well as that, the fact that you do have hundreds of first-time buyers for the first time since 2007 now, buying homes on a weekly basis. It's still a long way short of what is needed. And then you're going to get those revised targets, which essentially is the government admitting that things have moved on a lot since its plan was launched 4 years ago. Micheál Martin seemed to be letting the cat out of the bag on that when he has started mentioning in the last 7 days that you need 60,000 homes a year, which is exactly I suppose, where Sinn Féin is at.
But exactly, it's how you achieve the target, even though the target is the same, because that's taking account of capacity and everything else. But let's change tack here.
But if government is seen to be able to show that there is momentum, isn't that the hope for government? And that is going to continue.
Yeah.
Just to come in on that, the problem for the government, and they would say it's really unfair, they were hit with Brexit, COVID, war in Ukraine, pushing up prices, all of that, and an increased population. But the reality is that while they are delivering houses, it has really ramped up. We might hit the 40,000 this year. House prices are still going up. Mm-hmm. Rents are still going up. Homelessness are still going up. So those are the real figures that matter to people. And I think it's very difficult for the government to counter that.
OK, we leave that one there. Just if that was Monday, Tuesday had a very serious topic, and that was the government publishing a report in relation to historic sexual abuse at Catholic schools run by religious institutions. And I think, Sandra Hurley, there probably was an awful lot of people in the country going to the fifth volume of that report and taking a look at all of the schools who were involved. The number of abusers that were in each school, the number of allegations which were being made. It really was a shocking report, even though we've been there before.
Yeah, there's a sort of horrible repetition to it, really. We've been through so many previous commissions of investigation into various dioceses around the country, but there's still much that is left to uncover. So this looked at certain schools run by religious orders, 300 schools, but the scale of the abuse uncovered is really shocking. And the senior counsel who did this scoping inquiry, Mary O'Toole, said this obviously isn't the full number because not everybody comes forward. On the political side of it now, of course, you have the government straight away committing to doing a full commission of investigation, and they are looking at some form of redress as well. But those are politically difficult questions. On the commission of investigation, they're already talking about broadening this out to all state-run schools, potentially 4,000 schools. This is an absolutely enormous task. The first job there's and sort of interdepartmental group set up is to draw up the terms of reference. We know that that's fraught with danger if you don't do that right. If you don't get the survivors on board, it's already politically tainted. Alongside that, they're going to look at redress as well. But I think this group won't come up with proposals on redress at this stage, but they will consider it as part of their remit. But it's something that it's going to take a long time really to get through all of this.
I suppose it was just part of the difficulty of listening to it, Juliette Gash, was just the stories. Because once again, people were starting to tell their stories on radio, on television, you were reading it. Mm. And even though we know it, the brutality of what happened to them, akin to torture, is still shocking.
It's still, I mean, some of the accounts were just medieval in their descriptions. They were just horrendous. And, you know, there was interviews with people as young as 5 and a half when the abuse started in boarding schools. I mean, you're talking little children at the mercy of mostly grown men. And it was just horrific to read, absolutely. And here we go again. And that's the hard part, I think. I think one of the elements that was really just even harder to take was the amount of special schools that this was happening in. You know, a quarter of the instances of abuse, I think, were in special schools. So you're talking about the most vulnerable children. So, yeah, I mean, as Sandra said, politically, the nettle is a hard one to grasp, and it's just so vast. It won't be one for this government. There just won't be time to get to that stage. And opening it up, it seems, to all schools is the, I suppose, the proper and right thing to do, but then it becomes so difficult.
Isn't that the political calculation, maybe, that you publish the report, you set up a committee, but the tougher decisions, which Sandra was going through, picking a chairperson, how many schools are involved, how long is it going to be run for, are you going to have a parallel system of paying out to victims some form of compensation while at the same time investigating it, all that stuff, that's beyond the next general election.
Oh, yeah, clearly. And I mean, you can see political positioning already. The Taoiseach speaking about this in Ukraine yesterday said that the redress can come at the end. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, in whose hands does that decision lie for the moment? If there was a massive urgency within government to address that key point and say redress goes at the start, well, that is in the Taoiseach's and the government's hands. But on that point, in the press conference on Tuesday, Norma Foley was extremely cautious on that question of redress, much more open to that idea that all schools, the 3,200 primaries and the 750 secondaries, could be included first, and not really dealing with that question of redress. So it would be surprising if government goes in that direction before the election, but there will be pressure to do so. As well as that, there is that question around religious orders and the fact that the track record here of the political system meeting with the religious orders is very poor indeed. There was a massive shortfall when it came to paying up before. What you do have too is that phenomenon which is known as the developer's wife, where assets are transferred from the religious orders and out into lay trusts. The liability remains with the order, but the trust has the money. The trust doesn't have liability. A legal mechanism or piece of legislation probably has to come to do something about that as well. These are big issues that have to be grappled with.
I mean, and if you look at the wider issue again, I think Michael Mansfield brought this up, one of the survivors of abuse in Blackrock College, saying that, you know, the state needs to look at the fact that they are still entrusting many of these orders with the education of children. And while their safeguarding practices have, of course, changed, these are some orders who have not paid their contribution, and should they still be in charge of educating children in Ireland?
So the Solidarity TD McBarry making that exact point, and directly after the document was released. So many challenges there. But we, given that it's not going to be answered in this political cycle, let's move on to some of the other stuff. We had a drawing of straws earlier on in this podcast, and Sandra Hurley got the short straw, which means she's working this weekend. And you've got a special guest who's flying in from London.
Just for you.
Yes, the British Prime Minister Keir Starmer is going to be here on Saturday. He is meeting the Taoiseach Simon Harris. We don't know whether he is coming to Ireland for the England-Ireland match, and sort of the Taoiseach meeting is bolted on, or is he coming here to meet the Taoiseach and the match is kind of a bonus? I'm not sure on that one, but
we do kind of know
the timing has clearly
been. He's a football man.
The timing has been dictated.
Arsenal supporter plays.
That's what
I
heard today.
Time,
Arsenal, yeah. Yes.
Who does the Taoiseach support?
We obviously Bray Wanderers, you know.
Of course. Grey Stones man supporting Bray Wanderers.
Of course. So Keir Starmer will be here. It's going to be a very quick visit. Most of it out in Farmley, we think. And we are told that they had very good relations when they met 6 or 7 weeks ago in Chequers. You might remember Simon Harris was there. They drank a pint of Guinness.
We saw the photographs.
More publicity for Guinness when they don't really need it. But I suppose there's clearly the reset between Britain and the European Union at the moment. Keir Starmer was meeting President Macron in France. He met the Chancellor, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz in Germany. And they're trying to reset relations with Europe. They're also trying to reset relations with Ireland. There is a better relationship there that they are trying to nurture. And we're told that they will discuss many things this weekend relating to all of that.
That's a new relationship. Someone from an old relationship made a comeback today, Juliette Gash. Michel Barnier is back.
He's back. The return. Yeah, he's the new French Prime Minister. He has been proposed and also, you know, endorsed, and he is the Prime Minister. The difficulty is that he comes from a party with a limited amount of members of Parliament behind it, 47, I think, for Les Républicains. And obviously the left-wing coalition is the one that formed just ahead of this election, has the highest number of parliamentarians, and they are saying they will not support him. So it's already slightly tricky. Marine Le Pen's party have said they will see, they're sort of waiting to see, but they are not in government.
Opposing him.
So it is a tricky one, but it is interesting to see him coming back, and from France's youngest prime minister ever in his predecessor, Gabriel Attal, to now France's oldest prime minister at 73. It's interesting. I suppose he's very familiar to Irish listeners
just
and viewers, you know, the Brexit negotiator. And as the UK is trying to reset its relations, it's an old friend, perhaps to Labour. But yeah, it's an interesting choice. And my mum is delighted as the French.
That's the most important
Frenchie.
Thing to know.
Exactly. She says.
I'd say Phil Hogan's delighted too. They were good buddies, weren't they?
They were. They got on very well. And indeed, he is someone who was recognised in the streets of Dublin any time he came down. Mm-hmm. He's also a guy who's into endurance. We know that he likes to climb mountains. We know that he's a good skier. So he's the type of person who's been around a while, as you said, Juliette. And maybe one of the things I thought was interesting, because he did knew an awful lot about the financial markets in the UK, because he was his commissionership when he was that sort of covered over that. So he knew the UK extremely well. Mm. And from what we know, the UK probably would hope that France would act, you know, greasing the wheels of the UK, getting closer to the European Union as well, as indeed, no doubt, they would hope that Simon Harris would do the same. But interestingly, Micheál Lehane, no press conference at Chequers. And from what we're hearing, there probably isn't going to be a press conference in Dublin either. This is keeping it nice and quiet.
I'd like to see a press conference with Keir Starmer, Simon Harris, Jack Grealish and Declan Rice. You know,
that like, could be controversial, you know.
Yeah, why did you leave Declan Rice?
Is he going to be booed, Declan Rice?
Yeah, that's the question, isn't it? Of course, Arsenal player as well. So Keir Starmer
will
be watching
man, I'm
that. Yeah.
Sort of going like, to keep my views to myself. But
in some ways, it's really interesting, isn't it, that you have players who kind of were one on the senior team and one all the way up to Jack Grealish in the case, up to the under-18s and has an under-21 cap as well, I think. And as well as that, Jack Grealish actually played in Croke Park as a youngster. Played GAA in Croke Park for Warwickshire. So you have these kind of links, and then there was a comfortableness in the end that they were able to go and declare to become full internationals for England. Now, that the question is there, is that actually just showing that tensions have eased and that within sport you can see that kind of movement? And if there isn't massive booing, which there mightn't be, it could be a sign of maturity, or that could all be wishful thinking. There could be loads of booing.
But well, we saw the rugby crowd when the English team came over and played in Croke Park, yeah, and there was whatever 84,000 people crammed into it, and there was a certain apprehension at
same
that time
thing, yeah,
would there be, particularly around the British national anthem,
yeah,
and the place was quiet as a,
yes,
church. And then when the Irish national anthem, it seemed to release the crowd, mm-hmm, so the emotion was injected into,
yeah,
the national anthem,
yeah,
and the roof nearly came off the stadium.
Yeah, and the last playing of the English national anthem, I think, was last year when the Irish women's team played Northern Ireland, and there was nothing at all there. It was complete silence as well. So that could well be the case. It's been 2015 the last time England played in the Aviva, and before that, of course, it was the riot of 1995. 2015 was a fairly non-eventful game, so that's probably the way things are going. Big change since then in Brexit is the fact that Irish players can't go to Britain anymore till they're 18. That's the big tangible,
yeah,
difference.
Okay, just going to wrap it up fairly soon. Just throwing our eyes ahead, for example, is Alan Kelly going to be standing in the general election? Seem to be some questions over that. You were up at the Labour Party conference. What do we know?
Well, he's not there. He's not up at the conference.
Well, that's a problem for starters.
He's in Barisacane. He was involved in the campaign to keep the asylum seekers in Barisacane, where they had lived for some time. So he has a constituency matter that he's dealing with. So that is a good out on that question. Ivana Batrick saying she's absolutely certain that he will run.
There's going to be a few more of these so-called think-ins. We're not sure how much thinking is going on. The Fine Gaelers are going to be in Tullamore as well. And what are you looking forward to next week, Juliet? Is there anything on the horizon? Because I have to say, this week has been just unbelievable. Even we haven't even discussed it very much, but you know, the Taoiseach's been in Ukraine,
yeah,
signing another deal. I mean, stuff's happening.
Ukraine and then Poland, and then, you know, he has not stopped. I suppose I'm all gearing up to the Week in Politics, which is coming back on the 22nd.
Plug.
We have a little bit of time. So
no shame
so
at all.
Have to do it. But yeah, the think-ins are going to be interesting, see what comes out of those. And then we've got ploughing the following week. So
it's quiet in here, though. I think that is striking, actually,
yeah,
within the building. At this point of the year, there might be some committees meeting, there might be politicians back, but it is notable that they're not here. They're obviously still in their constituencies and they're all waiting for that election, which everyone thinks is happening, except for Simon Harris,
okay,
who says it isn't. One interesting theory at the Labour Party thinking, many in that party don't believe that the finance bill will go through at all, that on budget day, the budget will be announced and the Taoiseach will say, this is the budget that I will implement. There's 4 months then before the finance bill has to be implemented, and the clock actually stops during an election campaign. If that were to happen, you'd have the full campaign before the clocks go back. That's a theory.
He stole all your time, Sandra Hurley. So 10 seconds, what's happening next week that you're looking out for?
Sure, there's no time. Sure. There's no end or beginning.
Justin
Hoffman is banging on the glass again, time to wrap up here.
I think following on from what Micheál said, I still say November 15th. The responsible thing is get the finance bill
through. Yeah, when you've gone to all that effort.
Really, I don't see that, but I like it as a theory because we need something new to add into this election debate. Every week we need a new theory.
Well, political listeners, if you do want to keep in touch with all of what's happening, and don't forget to log on to the
And remember Patrick O'Donovan's advice, listeners. If you're parking your bike, just put a bag over the saddle. It's the rural thing to do, he said.
That's it. Mm.
Well, we're going to have more political gems on the next Your Politics podcast. Please do stay with us. Talk to you then.